Dilligaff, hello and welcome to the Geeks of Doom Roundup, where we talk a little about movies, music, what's happening at geeksofdoom.com, and what's coming up on the podcast, Social Blend, and The Drill Down. My name is Greg Davies, also known as CGT2099, and I'm here with Mr. Andy Sorcini, otherwise known as Mr. Baby Man. Andy, what's up?
How's it going, Greg? We skipped a week because last week we were doing a live Oscar, Academy Awards live blog on Geeks of Doom.
I wanted to say, you know, I was in a bit of a pickle because I was hoping to join in, and I thought that I wasn't going to be able to make it, but I got in there late into the live blogging chat that we had set up there, and it was really a lot of fun.
I mean, being
one of the only people in the chat that didn't have access to a television or a televised broadcast of the Oscars. It was nice to catch it as things were happening, you know, and find out what people thought. And there were some surprises there too.
Yes. I honestly didn't think the artist was going to take so many awards. I thought for sure that it was going to be Hugo for the most part.
Yeah, Hugo was the one that everyone was kind of banking on, it seemed. And but you know what? I got to say, I mean, I think this year's list of nominees was probably a list of meh for me. There wasn't a lot of stuff on there that really stood out as like stuff that really felt like that 2011 was a grand year in cinema.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of really thought-provoking stuff, but not a lot of huge. I actually didn't expect to see too many tentpole blockbusters in the Best Picture lineup. I think I think next year will probably be a much better year for Oscars when the time rolls around. So, but I thought this year was okay. Of the Best Picture nominees, I saw most of them. I think I did not see The Help was the only one that I didn't see. And most of them, I could agree, for the most part, were Oscar worthy. I honestly didn't think The Artist was the one that won, ironically enough, was the one in that list that I felt that was not Oscar worthy, Oscar caliber, in my opinion. But it was a solid movie in any case, and very entertaining and very enjoyable. So,
Andy, you are you yourself have been involved in the movie industry, and you've got a pretty good radar, if you will, for picking out the stuff that seems to do well in the among the critics and so on and so forth. Yeah. And I know over the last few years, like movies like No Country for Old Men, the year that did really well at the Oscars, you called that. You were before the announcements were made. You said, yeah, that's going to win hands down.
So you've
got a good radar for that stuff. With your prediction not coming out as you thought it would for this year.
Yeah, I did terribly this year.
Is that a sign that the Academy is losing touch? I mean, that's an argument that I've seen online very strongly over the last few months in the run-up to the ceremony.
I think there has always been an aspect that the Academy has always been out of touch at one point or another. I don't think they're any more out of touch this year than they have been in past years, going back to like when they gave Whoopi Goldberg Best Actress for Ghost or Best Supporting Actress for Ghost, or when they some other, or even Ghost won Best Picture, I think, that year. And that, I think that was a, that goes way back to, you know, the 80s. And that was, I thought, was a terrible, you know, that was the first drop in the bucket this first sense that I got that Oscar was out of touch. And I think it's been, you know, it's been pretty consistently through the years, there have been points where Oscar has proven that they're completely out of touch. I think this year was,
or is it us that's out of touch because we're getting older?
I still, you know what? I think if you really want kind of a more accurate, a more accurate kind of gauge of where the illiterati votes for Oscars for best pictures. I would go for the Independent Spirit Awards. The Independent Spirit Awards, the IFC Independent Spirit, or IFC or Sundance, I think, or both. The Independent Spirit Awards. Oh, it's IFC, obviously, because Sundance has their own awards. But the Independent Spirit Awards are really, to me, the more accurate gauge of motion picture achievement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, from the Oscars into my little big news for the week. I'm just going to brag about this now. I got home 4 a.m. this morning from Denton, Texas, after a very long drive, after seeing Henry Rollins do a spoken word show.
Oh, wow.
At the University of North Texas. And I had the absolute honor and privilege of meeting the man after the show.
Oh, nice.
Got a photo with him and shook his hand. And I didn't want to take up too much of his time, just said hello and thank you. Because everyone else, there was like, you know, a good 100 other people there that wanted to meet him, and he was going nowhere. He was going to stay there until everyone had gone. So I didn't want to take up too much of his time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was an absolute blast. If you ever hear of Henry Rollins doing a spoken word show in your area, I highly recommend you go and check it out, because it is an absolute blast. There are moments where you are quite literally clinging onto your guts, trying not to piss in your pants because you're laughing so hard, and other moments where he speaks of more serious, sobering topics where you can literally hear a pin drop in the room because he has everyone's attention. It's just an absolutely phenomenal experience, and I highly recommend it. And if you've never seen any of it before, it's all over YouTube. You go to YouTube and do a search for Henry Rollins, spoken word. There's a whole bunch of stuff there you can check out. But yeah, I just wanted to brag about that because it was awesome.
You know, what's funny about that is that I always consider Henry Rollins as the lead singer for Black Flag, but I think he's been doing the spoken word thing a lot longer than he's been doing than he ever did the Black Flag thing.
Well, yes, but I mean, he's going to be remembered for what he first gained notoriety for, which was being involved with Black Flag. But he has been involved in a lot more than just that. He's also been an actor. He's also a writer. He's written many books. He is he's involved at the moment with a lot of documentary series shows with National Geographic, capturing his worldwide travels and going into places like Syria and North Korea and places where essentially he said in the show last night, anywhere where the government has said you're not supposed to go there, he's like, really? And it goes there anyway to go and check it out and see what people are like over there. And so National Geographic are kind of capturing some of that. He's also been a television show host. He had his own show on IFC for a while. So he's done a lot of stuff aside from Black Flag and his own music and things like that. But the most consistent thing that he's done throughout his entire career, from the time he was in Black Flag right up until now, has been the spoken word show.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
He's a lot more positive now than what he was, say, 20 years ago on stage. And maybe that might be a sign of age, I don't know, but there's a lot more optimism in his speaking.
That's the other thing, is I remember him always being very angry, very angry.
The anger is always still there.
Right.
I mean, you know, the most interesting thing that not necessarily the most funniest, I think, for me last night was he did a reading from George W. Bush's book in his George W. Bush voice. And it was just absolutely hysterical. You know, it was really, really well worth the trip down to Denton and checking it out.
Wow.
So, but anyway, that's more news. I wanted to brag about that. So, well, we better get on with the show though, cause we're burning through the time. And, you know, Andy, I kind of had a feeling that you were going to at some point pick this particular trailer for the Geeks of Doom Roundup, because you are most definitely a Morgan Spurlock fan, I think.
Well, you know, I do like Morgan Spurlock, but I'm not as big of a Morgan Spurlock fan as I am of the subject that he's covering in this documentary, and that is Comic-Con, a subject near and dear to my heart. I've been a frequent Comic-Con attender for the last few years now. And Morgan Spurlock has a new documentary that digs into the subject of what it's like to be a fan going to Comic-Con. And this is called, appropriately enough, Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. And no, there were no episodes 1 through 3.
Yeah.
this is a clever nod to the Star Wars saga. It's an in joke that fanboys instantly get when they hear the title. Mm-hmm. So a very appropriately titled movie, and this movie is backed by it's Morgan Spurlock plus Joss Whedon, excuse me, Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool News. They're all executive producers on this, so it's a big movie. They, in fact, here's how close I am to this movie. Is I was actually in a group of people who one of the people in my group was one of the subjects of one of the stories, one of the ongoing stories within this movie. So you might actually, if you see this movie, you might actually see me in the background of some of the shots, because I was definitely standing next to the money, as they say.
are you in the trailer? Or
no, I'm not in the trailer. Not in the trailer. I didn't see myself in the trailer, but I'm fairly certain you'll probably see me in some of the background shots.
Is it the collector or the designer? Or
no, it was a guy who was getting married at Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
So, unless that whole storyline got cut from the movie entirely, you'll probably see me somewhere in the background in some of those shots. But let's not waste any more time talking about the trailer. Let's take a listen to the trailer for Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope, directed by Morgan Spurlock.
I'll never forget the first time I took a peek next to a stormtrooper and a Klingon. That could only happen at Comic-Con.
Okay, we're good.
All right, guys.
I was looking out my hotel room window and I saw three Ninja Turtles really impatiently checking their watches.
Where? Excuse me. You have to check that in.
In the mind of every comic book fiend, Comic-Con is just the answer to all your prayers. It's like heaven, in as much as, like they always tell you, when you go to heaven, everything you've ever lost is going to come back to you.
I want to get in already.
My wife's not too ecstatic about this whole toy collecting thing.
Let's go.
But I will not leave that con unless I have those figures.
That's Paul!
Comic-Con is a job fair for comic book industry.
It's just a jump into the fire, as Duran Duran would say.
I read comics every day as a kid, and I really, really want to do this so badly.
Entry 11!
Comic-Con is a great place for exposure. And it's a big chance for me to get myself out there. It's about getting all your friends together and going on a suicide mission. And that's what this is. It's a suicide mission for my future.
Right now. I feel like I'm the Flash and I can just move through solid objects.
If I can go back in time and tell like 11-year-old me, like, one day not only do you go to Comic-Con, you go to Comic-Con every year, so much so that like you get greeted by Stan Lee when you show up. Yeah. No, and the 11-year-old me would be like, how did we get so fat?
I have to close off this by saying that if you have never been to Comic-Con and you want to, you have to go. It's absolutely, it's like Mecca. It's a quest that you must make at least once in your life if you're a fan of anything pop culture. Go to Comic-Con. Unfortunately, if you wanted to go this year,
too late.
You're pretty much out of luck because ticket sales sold in minutes. From when they first were announced. And unless you're a member of the press or in the entertainment industry, you are SOL. You are not going to Comic-Con. So maybe next year.
Start saving.
Yeah.
But there's also other cons. I know Tom Cheridar is a big proponent of Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big proponent. And Dragon Con is less about the... less about the panels and the news and the interviews with and the exclusives, and it's more about the community of folks that enjoy the cosplay and they get dressed up, and it seems to be more about that kind of community feel rather than the promotional aspect of Comic-Con. I'm not saying it's bad or anything. Right. It's just it's different. It's a different style of con. So.
Right. Plus, also the people who actually put on Comic-Con in San Diego also put on a show called WonderCon, which takes place in Anaheim. The Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco, and I think there's like a couple other shows that they put on throughout the year. So you can get a similar feel at one of those other affiliated shows. It's not quite the same as Comic-Con, but it'll probably be close.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Greg, tell us about your music choice for this week.
Okay, well, the music choice this week is actually going to be a segue into a darker side of the show this week, because as people well know, we have had a tradition on the Roundup to pay tribute to the fallen. We always do this. Like, if there's a passing in the movie industry or the music industry, we make sure we make the time to tip the hat to whoever it is that has passed on. And I'm sorry to say, Andy, but the week just gone has sucked in terms of our idols going away.
People are dropping off left and right.
I know it's really 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 disheartening and upsetting in a lot of ways. And the first person that we're going to pay tribute to in the form of our music segment this week is Ronnie Montrose. Now, a lot of young rock fans and metalheads may not know the name Ronnie Montrose, which really saddens me, but they should, because Montrose was a cornerstone of the rock and metal scene in the early 70s. And in his band that was called Montrose, named after his last name, he had Sammy Hagar as lead singer in one of his first outings into rock and roll before he went on to do his solo career, and then Van Halen. He was known; they were known for two songs, "Bad Motor Scooter" and "Rock Candy." Those two songs are etched into the granite of rock and roll and heavy metal history as classics. Major influences into the bands that followed. And as a matter of fact, Bad Motor Scooter has an intro using slide guitar technique to have a motorcycle type sound coming from the amplifier, a technique which was later ripped off by Motley Crue in Kickstart My Heart, which became one of their most famous songs. So they have influenced a whole wide range of artists, and Ronnie Montrose as a guitarist was of no exception to that rule. He was a major influence to many people, blasting out onto the scene in the 1970s and continuing right through into the modern era making music. Aside from Bad Motor Scooter and Rock Candy, he never had any major success beyond that, which is kind of unfortunate, but he was always known to the rock community. And he is basically, if rock and roll and heavy metal was a building, Montrose would be one of the, quite literally the cornerstone or the foundation. He would be one of those. The whole scene has been built upon some of the work that he has done, among with many others. So one thing you may not know about Ronnie Montrose, Andy.
Yeah.
One of the first bands he was with was the Edgar Winter Group. He played on the song "Free Ride."
Oh, I love that! I love that song.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then he went on to do his own solo thing. Now, anyway, Ronnie had been battling cancer. He'd been dealing with prostate cancer since 2009, and basically, he came to the end of his recovery in 2011, and it's really bizarre, the announcement that was made on his site. I'm just going to read this to you. It says, a few months ago, we held a surprise party for Ronnie Montrose's 64th birthday. He gave an impromptu speech and told us that after a long life filled with joy and hardship, he didn't take any of our love for granted. He passed away today. He battled cancer and staved off old age for long enough. And true to form, he chose his own exit the way he chose his own life. We miss him already, but we're glad to have shared with him while we could.
He chose his own exit.
Yeah, now that's the thing that stands out for me, because it doesn't, the announcement they make doesn't say that he passed away from cancer.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't really make clear whether he maybe took his own life or
interesting
or anything, because that's kind of what it seems to imply.
Huh. Well, we don't know until we hear an official word, right?
Well, that is the official word. That is the official word. That's from his publicist, his official site and everything. So, you know, maybe they're going to leave it as is. And, you know, I would think I would prefer that to be the case, that it be left a little bit ambiguous and, you know, letting people know that he went out the way he wanted to, and it contributes to the legend of Ronnie Montrose. Now, I've chosen a specific song for this episode in tribute to Ronnie, and that is from his outfit Montrose on their first album. The song is called Space Station Number 5, and there's a reason I chose this specifically. It's been covered by a couple of bands, including Iron Maiden. Now, the reason I chose this is that Montrose was kind of one of the first guitarists that tried to use the guitar to emulate sound effects and tones to try and emulate the subject upon which they were singing about. And the intro to Space Station Number 5 is most certainly, weirdly, very much in that vein. It certainly gives you the sci-fi feel because it's all guitar intro. And so I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to pay tribute to Ronnie Montrose with Space Station Number 5.
Well, there we go. There's a little clip from Space Station Number 5 by Ronnie Montrose. And, yeah, I see what you mean by there in the beginning there, some of those trippy space station effects.
Absolutely. And he was a forerunner to experimenting with the guitar like that. And, us metalheads are going to really, really miss him a lot. He contributed a lot to the rock movement. And, it's the loss is felt very much. Very much harder. And if you don't mind, Andy, I might seg into my story of the week, seeing as it's on the
Absolutely.
Topic of music. But also felt very hard this week in the rock and roll world was the passing of Davy Jones. Davy Jones of the Monkees, who was brought on board as the teenage heartthrob British member of the band, passed away this week from suffering from a massive heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
He was 66 years old, and
that seems to me to be too young to pass away.
Yeah, but both Ronnie Montrose and Davy Jones are both in their 60s, 64 and 66 respectfully. So, yes, it is premature death, I would say. Hmm. It's definitely a very, very sad piece of news that came out this week. I mean, the Monkees were a huge influence on rock and roll in the United States, and most certainly eventually the rock that influenced the metal scene as well. I do recall many years ago on the original incarnation of this show, The Roundup, either you or myself, we played a mashup of I'm a Believer and The Trooper by Iron Maiden, which was just unbelievably well done. It fits so well, it's a testament to the work that they did.
Yep.
And the interesting thing about the Monkees is that they were originally hired for the television show, and while all of them had some musical talent of their own, mm-hmm. the producers refused to let them play their own instruments in the beginning. They were just
right.
hired to sing. And after many years of very negative arguments and fighting with the producers, they eventually moved forward and autonomously took control of their own musical direction, which was great. And so they had some fantastic hits that came out. I'm a Believer, Last Train to Clarksville.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to close out the show with one of the well-known songs that Davy Jones sang, which is Daydream Believer. And so we're going to close out the show with that particular song in tribute to him. And it's very sad to see him go. And also...
Yes.
Joining a member of the Fallen this week.
Yes.
Very sad news. I'm going to pass it over to you for your story this week, Andy.
Yes, my story on Geeks of Doom this week is going to be about the sad passing of a legend, a man whose influence we have all taken a part of, I'm fairly certain, and that is Ralph McQuarrie, who is most famous for his concept art and paintings that inspired George Lucas for the original Star Wars trilogy. And believe me, I mean, if you've seen any... first of all, let me lay down the facts here. He was 82 years old, a good long life, I feel. That's more. That's closer to the age that I expect people to be passing away. he died on March 3rd, which was yesterday. And if you've ever seen any of his artwork, you'll see how closely George Lucas followed his concept art to the final images on screen for Star Wars. I mean, some of his concept art looks exactly like what ended up being on screen, so you could see
it literally defined the way the music was going to be. The movie was going to
yes.
be the whole look of the movie was credited to the work of McQuarrie.
Yeah, I think without McQuarrie's work, we would be seeing a completely different and perhaps not nearly as successful Star Wars. I feel like a lot of those shots, like that iconic shot
where Luke is looking out on the plains of Tatooine and the two suns are the binary suns are setting. That's McQuarrie. He composed the art for that shot. I mean, that's his artwork basically that inspired Lucas to direct the film that way. Shots like the Jawa, the huge Jawa transport, robot transport. Like, he essentially came up with the concepts for that. Shots of the Death Star docking bays. Those are some of his. The look of the seventh moon of Yavin, where the rebel base was at the end of the movie. That's kind of his look, inspired by the Mayan locations that they were shooting. Plus, not to mention the other two movies in the original trilogy he worked on. It's just amazing work, and it's sad that we are losing such a great and talented artist, but I'm so glad that we had his art to help inspire the legendary movies that we all grew up watching.
Andy, being a bit of a Star Wars historian, I do need to jump in and say a couple of things that, first of all, are in total agreement with you. There are some compositions that range across the original trilogy that he did that are quite literally exactly as they appear on screen.
Mm-hmm.
In Empire Strikes Back, most of the Battle of Hoth and the Cloud City scenery is quite literally... as you see on screen, exactly as it was in his original art. And the same could be said of the speeder bike chase from Return of the Jedi, as well as the Emperor electrocuting Luke Skywalker. That was, he came up with that. Right. But the other interesting thing about Ralph McQuarrie is that if you do look up some of his work, like, there's some interesting stuff that he did that never ended up in the movies. For example, his original design of Chewbacca looks nothing like Chewbacca.
Right.
You know, he's more like a werewolf with pointy ears, and he's wearing pants.
Right. Or even this, if you look at his design for Darth Vader, which looks similar, but not quite what they finally ended up with.
Yeah.
Like, his original look for Darth Vader is even more menacing, if you can believe it.
And that's actually the mask that Darth Vader wears. He is credited with that design because originally, in George Lucas's mind, Vader didn't have a mask.
Hmm.
And Ralph McQuarrie, in his mind, this is, I'm not quoting verbatim here. I'm paraphrasing, but he was worried that in transferring from one ship to another without any oxygen, he would need a mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he gave Darth Vader a mask. It was his idea for that helmet. And, he's credited to that. That wasn't George that came up with the Darth Vader helmet design. That was Ralph. He's also responsible for the look of some of the stuff in the prequel trilogy, notably Alderaan. He designed Alderaan. So when you see Alderaan in Revenge of the Sith, that's all Ralph McQuarrie's design. So there's a whole bunch of things there. If you look up his stuff, there's a fascinating design. George's original concept for Return of the Jedi was that Luke, Vader, and the Emperor's confrontation was not going to happen on the Death Star. Instead, it was going to happen in the bowels of a volcanic planet called Hadabaddon.
Huh.
And McQuarrie actually has done a composition of that, and it's out there and it's around the place. I do have a link of some of these examples, and I'll put them in the show notes so people can have a look at what's out there. But, his work is just such an essential part of the Star Wars, if you're a Star Wars fan.
Yep.
But let us not forget as well. I mean, I don't want to get all Star Wars geek on everyone, but, he's also responsible for a lot of other movies as well. He did a lot of stuff on Battlestar Galactica and the fourth Star Trek movie. Help me out here. I think he also did E.T. Did he do E.T.?
I don't know offhand, but, I'm sure that Wikipedia can help me out.
Here we are. Yeah, I'm looking at the Geeks of Doom article here. He did E.T., Close Encounters, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Jurassic Park. He was responsible for Jurassic Park and Cocoon. So I'm sure he did a lot more than that, but you know, he was he's probably best known among Star Wars fans. But
I want to quote George Lucas here himself about Ralph McQuarrie to close off this this tribute. He said, "When words could not convey my ideas, I could always point to one of Ralph's fabulous illustrations and say, do it like this." So we tribute Ralph McQuarrie and wish him well on his journey off into the stars.
Off into the Force.
Yes.
He is one with the Force. He will be missed, that's for sure.
So Greg, what have you got going this week on the Social Blend?
Well, I'll tell you what. For last week, we done goofed.
Oh, really?
We done goofed. We did a whole show, and the recording didn't take. So we didn't have a show to put up online last week.
Oh, no.
It was so disheartening. So we put up a little make good, just a little five-minute snippet where we got a chance to pay tribute to Davy Jones, and we put a funny picture on the side of Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean. We had a little thing on there, but we are coming back this week with a full episode, and the crew that we had on the previous attempt was, of course, Jay, my co-host of the show, and we also had Tara and Brian Bickerton with us, and they're coming back for us. We are going to talk again about Davy Jones and Ronnie Montrose and Ralph McQuarrie, of course, but some of the other news that we did want to talk about last week that we will talk about include the new Avengers trailer, which is mind-numbingly good. We have some West Memphis 3 news. And there's also the word that there's a new Baldur's Gate game coming out, and Jay and Tara are both very excited about that. Now, Andy, one of the things that we do on Social Blend, I'm happy to say, is starting to reach fruition in terms of basically what the original intent was. And you might remember it's called Countdown to the Guts Fuck of Humanity. And this is basically where we look at what... look at the concept that people have about the end of the world happening at the end of 2012 or at the beginning of 2013, and look at how the media is going to start reporting that or get people psyched up about it or get people panicking about that. Well, Russia Today are already at it, and they are reporting an Earth collision of an asteroid or a meteorite or something. And they're reporting that it should be as big as the Tunguska effect or bigger.
When is this happening?
No, it's not happening.
I was going to say.
They're saying it's going to happen in February 2013. But it's according to NASA, I mean, it's 0 out of 10 chance of it actually hitting Earth.
I think people have been predicting the end of the world since the world pretty much began.
Right, but this is the year where they're going to amp it up and frighten the shit out of people. And so, you know, what we're trying to do is grab these articles and highlight and say, see, we told you they were going to run with this. It's all bullshit. So that's one of the things. And the other thing we're going to talk about is a new show that's apparently on, I think it's on History Channel. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. Called Doomsday Preppers. That's Doomsday apparently Preppers. Been floating around about these people who are preparing for the end of the world.
Ah, well.
So, yes. You know.
Once again, that's been going on for forever.
Right, but they're televising it now as a regular television series. What the you know, it makes me mad. Anyway, so we're going to, you know, things like that are starting to reach the point where the media is going to start using the idea of 2012 being the end of the world to their advantage to, you know, freak people out and get some advertising revenue out of it. So they're just going to make money off your fear if you're, you know, silly enough to believe it. But, you know, that's one of the things we're going to be focusing on Social Blend this week. So what's up with the drill down?
Well, the drill coming on the drill down this week, there's one thing that I guarantee you that we're going to be talking about in depth. And that is Apple has announced that they have an event planned for next Wednesday, which is the day that we go on air at the drill.
I wonder what it could be.
And it's fairly certain. Everyone is pretty 99% certain that they're going to be announcing the next version of the iPad
the iPad. We're not even sure what the name of it. It'll either be the iPad 3 or the iPad HD. It's the iPad that has the Retina display is the major upgrade on this version. So we're going to be talking in depth about that on the evening after the day of the when they announce that. So that for sure we're going to be talking about. We're also going to be covering some other stuff, such as Zynga has spun off into from being a social game site connected with space. With Facebook to its own site where you can play their Zynga games on Zynga.com. But you know, more than talking about what. Where is coming up on the drill down. I actually want to talk about the show that we just had, which I thought was a pretty phenomenal show.
Yes, I did see this posted at Geeks of Doom, by the way.
On last week's episode, we had three top contributors to the site Reddit.com. And these are people who, by very definition, have amassed the currency of Reddit, which is karma points. They have so many karma points between them that they surpass many of their peers. They're at the top of the list of karma point owners, which essentially means that their stuff has been deemed popular by the masses of Reddit, which is not as easy to do as you might think. So we talked to these three contributors who go by the handles of Sadra, Andrew Smith, 1986, and Violin Acres. Sadra, Andrew Smith, 1986, is the only one who has seemed to have avoided some sort of controversy. Sadra was pilloried by the Reddit users after allegations of using her influence to promote things that she was connected with financially. And Violin Acres is notorious for creating dozens of subreddits that were recently banned when Reddit came through with their ban against images featuring sexually suggestive pictures of minors. Violin Acres is quite proud of the fact that he's a porn purveyor. So it's worth listening to this episode. It's a couple hour long episode, but it's completely worth it because you really kind of get, if you're even the slightest bit interested in social news or the way social communities tick, it's you get a really inside look at what's going on at Reddit.com and how what it's like to be a top contributor at a social news site that drives traffic to thousands and thousands of thousands and thousands of page views a day worth of traffic, and where a lot of the viral memes kind of spout from. If they don't originate from Reddit, they are curated through Reddit and spout from, and then are quoted and reposted from Reddit. So
they are most certainly an amplifier of memes.
Yes,
that's absolutely true. They seem to originate in different, 4chan seems to be ground zero for quite a lot of them. But Reddit is known for quite a few that have exploded across the web. But what's notable about Reddit is that the community is so big now that they have their own insight memes that seem to... They don't propagate beyond the site, per se, but they become very big on Reddit, and they're quite known for like a few days. And some of the examples that I can think of, like one comes to mind, and that was the video of Fenton, Jesus Christ, Fenton, of the dog running into the. that was quite amusing, and that really only became popular on Reddit. That didn't really go anywhere else beyond that, but it still was very big on Reddit, and it was a big part of the community, and there were parodies of that for a while. But an example of one meme that exploded from Reddit that went everywhere was Chuck Tester.
Oh yeah, for
that
sure.
Went everywhere. I mean, that originated on Reddit, so I mean, they're most certainly a very big vocal force, and I find it interesting to look into the social aspects in the community aspects of Reddit.
Yep. Well, it's definitely worth a listen. And is that it? Are we at the end of our show?
Yeah. I don't have anything else on my list here except to say that you can catch Social Blend at social-blend.com. Oh, yes. On Thursdays, when we get the episode posted online. And we are also findable on iTunes. And we have a little subreddit that we post the episode to each week that some people subscribe to. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out at reddit.com/r/socialblend. And, of course, we're on the Facebookeries and the Twatters.
Yes. And as for the Drill Down, you can catch the Drill Down live on Wednesday evenings on geeksofdoom.com. And just go to Geeks of Doom and you'll find the link for the Drill Down in the sidebar. And then the following Friday, we put out our MP3 version that you can download on geeksofdoom.com. And, of course, subscribe to an iTunes and get it from there as well. And that's it. Let us go out with a little bit of the Monkees' Daydream Believer, featuring the dulcet tones of the late, the great Davy Jones.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, I could hide 'neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring, but it rings and I rise. Sleep out of my eyes. My shaven razor's cold and it stings. Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen? You once thought of me as a white knight on his steed. Now you know how happy I can be. Oh, and our good time starts and ends without dollar one to spend. But how much, baby, do you
On behalf of Greg Davies and myself, let us both just leave you with a
dilly gaff.